Neste post på programmet vil handle om det store bildet, om hvor mye karbon vi må la bli liggende, om verdien av kull, olje og gass, som risikerer å sprekke som boble. Our next speaker is a pioneer in the sustainable investment movement. He is the founder of the Carbon Tracker Initiative and conceived the unburnable carbon capital markets thesis. He commissioned and was editor of the report Unburnable Carbon, Are Markets Carrying a Carbon Bubble? Prior to forming Carbon Tracker, Mark Campanelli had 25 years of experience in sustainable financial markets. Please welcome Mr. Mark Campanelli.
Okay, so thanks very much. I've come from London to join you here today. Much appreciate the welcome. The oil industry is facing a real challenge. It's an industry which is used to long and sustained periods of growth. It's now facing its own existential challenge, the threat of climate change, which goes to the heart of the business models of some of the largest corporations in the world. My message to you today really is that we're at a period where if we're to take the challenge of climate change seriously, these companies will have to face a period of contraction, not growth. And the message I've got for you is, unfortunately, even after the Paris Agreement, we still have oil companies saying that the future is growth, 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 and here lies the challenge. What do we do as citizens? What do we do as members of pension funds that own these corporations? What do we do as union members, as employees, to really to take on the challenge? So what I want to do is say a few things about some of the science of carbon budgets. I've got about 20 minutes to speak, and really the challenge that we face ahead of us. So there's a series of bars there. What do they mean? What we're looking at here is some of the scientific estimates of how much CO2 can be released before we exceed 2 degrees and 3 degrees, and it's expressed in gigatons of carbon dioxide in coal, oil, and gas. And the 450 scenario you see there on the right equates to somewhere around the 2 degrees of warming that we want to limit ourselves to. A lot of gases have already been emitted over the last 150 years. If we're to look at all the oil and the coal, and I want to be clear about this, there's no shortage of these fossil fuel reserves out there. We can't possibly burn at all. We have to keep up to 80% of coal, oil, and gas in the ground. And yet the amount that we can burn is very, very limited. So the yellow stripes is how much CO2 would be released if we were to really go ahead and burn all the burn all the coal and the oil and release that carbon dioxide. So Carbon Tracker, we're a not-for-profit organization. Our first significant funder was the Rockefeller family, Rockefeller Brothers Fund, but also the children of the Rockefellers, who gave some funds to myself and colleagues in London to analyze the global coal, oil, and gas industry. And what we've looked there is a map. We took the top 200 companies like Shell, Statoil, Exxon, companies like Peabody, and we looked at all the CO2 that is in their reserves and their resources, and then we added it all up. And what these are these circles are stock exchanges with the CO2 embedded in reserves, and you can see there are two financial centers in the world, the New York Stock Exchange and the London Stock Exchange, have most of the publicly traded oil and gas. So why is this a problem? Well, we then went a little bit further and sort of say, well, look, we've got this thing called the carbon budget. We can't release all the CO2. We've got all these companies like Statoil that want to develop these projects. We can't burn at all. How does this fit? So we gave some of the remaining carbon budget to 2 degrees. It's around 900 gigatons to these publicly traded companies, and that's represented by that little green circle at the bottom. We then looked at the proven oil reserves, and the amount of CO2, and that's represented by the blue, 762 gigatons. And then we looked at the everything that they plan to develop next, which is all the resources, all the stuff that's out in the Arctic, the Canadian oil sands, and so on. And embedded in those reserves is over 1,500 gigatons of CO2. Now, why we called it a carbon bubble is very simply, the red doesn't fit into the green. Now, that's clearly the science. Now, that what do the financial markets tell us? The financial markets are sort of based on the presumption that companies like Exxon and Chevron and so on will get to burn everything. There's nobody to say to come along and say, we're going to stop you developing those reserves. But it presents a new risk to investors. And I want to look at the timeline. Some of the companies say, well, look, this is not a problem for us. We don't really need to worry about this until 2050, 2080. Now, is that true? So based on current emissions, we know from the IPCC that based on current emissions, which is representing sort of the current trend lines, that blue line, that we're going to probably break through 2 degrees in 2031. Now, my maths isn't that great, but that's, what, 15 years away? We'll then go through 3 degrees, which we've not seen, obviously, for hundreds of thousands of years, not that long afterwards in 2045. So we're talking about really all the crucial decisions being made now, being made by the decisions of boards of directors today. So looking at these big public corporations, and by the way, these are the corporations that are owned by, you know, the big asset managers here in Scandinavia. These corporations, let's look at, again, go back to the reserves in the ground. And we've just added up, represented by gigatons of carbon dioxide. There's that 7.62 figure. And also, we haven't even included in that what is owned by states, what is owned by governments like Venezuela and Saudi Arabia. I think the message here is there's just a lot of this fossil fuels out there, a lot of oil and gas out there waiting to be developed. Now, I think the challenge, and I say the challenge to the industry, is will these companies get to develop all their oil and gas? And where are the constraints? Now, some of these will be technological, the rise of the electric car, energy efficiency standards, and not everyone's going to need to use the oil. We think that the oil companies are particularly a misreading demand for their products in coming years. So what the Paris Agreement did do is to try and limit global average warming to well below 2 degrees, and we have that 1.5 degrees aspiration. And that really means net zero emissions after 2050. And over 187 countries have submitted plans covering 90% of emissions that would try and reduce the emissions from burning of fossil fuels in particular. So what are the oil companies are saying? Well, there's different scenarios, and we use the International Energy Agency, and sorry to get sort of too technical about this, that present different scenarios going out to 2040 about the use of oil and the use of coal and the use of gas. And even on the latest estimates, I want to be clear about this. A lot of business people, a lot of industrial professionals are expect us to increase the use of fossil fuels. Here we are at this event, trying to deal with the challenge of climate change, thinking that we're actually going to be reducing the use of fossil fuels. We have governments and countries and that have signed up to this international agreement in Paris that still expect us to have a rapid increase in the use of fossil fuels. How is that going to be possible? So we need to reduce it significantly. And I put some figures in there at the bottom there. By 2040, we actually need to reduce the use of fossil fuels by 80% to hit these targets. I'm not going to go into this in too much detail, but what these are along the bottom is companies like Shell and BP and Statoil and Exxon. And what you forecast is nearly all of them are projecting increases in use of fossil fuels. So this is a big challenge to those of us that want to deal with the problem of climate change. BP, which is probably in everyone's pension scheme, probably is probably even in the Norwegian pension scheme, they're forecasting a 24% increase in the use of fossil fuels by 2035. Exxon is expecting the use of fossil fuels to go up by 27%. OPEC is holding out for a 54% increase in use of fossil fuels. So what we have here is a fundamental paradox. How is it possible to achieve these emissions reductions targets when all these companies are planning to use your money and the money in the banking system to expand the use of fossil fuels? So we do have a sort of a paradox between these political aspirations, which is what they are, and what we think of as the real world, the business world, the commercial world, that is planning very much for business as usual. So how do we allocate this remaining carbon budget to 2 degrees? How do we work out which companies and which governments and so on get to develop their oil or their coal or their gas? Will Norway, for example, get to develop its oil and gas? And we've developed this idea of of cost curves, which is that, and to very simply put, if you can find oil at $5 a barrel and sell it at $30, that's probably going to be a good thing. But if you're finding oil at $80 a barrel and you're selling it at $30, which is roughly where the price is, that is very bad economics. So what we've done at Carbon Tracker is we've used the Rystad, which I've been told is called RISTA, is that correct here? Or the Rystad Energy Database, to analyze 8,000 projects all around the world, coal and gas projects, which are coming down the line, and to work out which ones, the different economics of every major project. And what we put there on the right there is that if you're a very high cost producer of oil, you're probably not going to be a winner in a 2 degrees world. So what does this mean for companies? Well, we've got companies going out there trying to develop these very expensive projects. Some of these may be new to you. Some of them may be familiar to you. The Kashagan project has cost $50 billion already and has yet to produce a barrel of oil. It's known by the banks as Cash All Gone, as they've spent their way through trying to develop this project without producing a single barrel. And yet around the world, we still see many projects underway, under development. Now, if you work in business, normally when you invest a dollar, you try and make maybe 50 cents back. What you'll see from here is three companies, Exxon, Chevron, and Shell. And what the blue line shows you is how much more money they're spending trying to find new oil projects. And normally what would happen is the red shows the production. The production should be going up when you spend more money. You should hopefully be producing more. What's actually been happening is the opposite. The more money's been spent on trying to find oil in places like the Arctic and ultra deep water, actually production's been staying flat, which simply reflects the economics. It's just very expensive to go and work out in the Arctic and to get oil out in the Arctic. And so it's uneconomic. And this is why a lot of these projects are being cancelled. Another piece of data, I'm sorry to throw tables and charts at you, but there's a simple story in this. When we plotted all these different projects, on the bottom left are break-even prices per barrel of oil in bands. And what we have on the right is all the cheap oil, which is owned by OPEC, on the right, which is represented by all the gray. In these cost bands, all these expensive projects costing $100 a barrel or more, they're owned by the publicly quoted companies, the ones that will be in your pension fund. Now, if there's a battle over who gets to sell their last oil because of climate limits, probably it's going to be the national oil companies and OPEC on the right that's going to be left with the projects, not the publicly traded ones, which have a lot of the expensive oil. So Goldman Sachs produced this chart. It's very similar to what we do. It models all these projects along a cost curve. And as you can see along here is names of individual oil projects. And what you'll see is the break-even prices. And what our friends at Bloomberg is, they put a red line through that and said, look, if you're in the business world and your job is to make money for your investors, for pensioners, you know, all these projects towards the right are going to be losing money. Actually, when they did this slide, oil was at $70, whereas today it's at $30. Let's move that red bar all the way over to the left. Because oil's down there at $30, where it says Kurdistan and Kenya. Most of the oil projects that are being planned for the future or under development are really struggling where oil is today. Now, why are oil prices low? I'm not a predictor of oil prices, but if we're using less oil because we're using electric cars, demand will drop and prices will stay down, and the oil industry is really facing a challenge. Here's BP with a similar kind of curve, and what you'll see, BP is a fairly well-known company. A lot of their projects are just way beyond where the oil price is. So what is the point I'm making here really is that as we deal with the problems of climate change, we have to understand the economics, we have to understand the financial case and the financial rationale. And that takes me really to where I want to get to, which is the Arctic. Now, some of us here have a lot of concerns about plans by oil companies to move into the Arctic. And when we looked at, I mentioned earlier, we looked at 8,000 different projects. We looked at the economics of these projects. What we find is that the projects that are not needed in a 2 degrees world, there's a column there in the middle, 52% of the projects, if we were to achieve 2 degrees, and I think most of us here hope that's where we land, over half of the projects being proposed for the Arctic are just not going to be needed in a 2 degrees world. They're some of the most expensive projects in the world. In fact, $69 billion of capital is planned by the big oil companies in the Arctic in coming years, which is just not going to be needed. We call that wasted capital or stranded assets. And the same is true of Arctic gas. $20 billion of capital will be spent 68% of all these new projects being planned for the Arctic for oil, for gas are just not needed. So there's a message here. There's a message here really for political leaders trying to make decisions for companies about where they're going to go. And this is a headline from the Financial Times picking out this phrase, stranded assets, from our first reports about Shell deciding to pull out of the Arctic because they're going to be left with these projects, is a lot of what's being planned, and if we're to achieve these climate goals, is not needed. These are political questions, but they're also business questions. And for those that are interested in the detail, I mentioned that we looked at all these projects. We've gone company by company, all the way down, looking at all their planned capital expenditure. Here's a figure that the IEA uses. $20 trillion is going to be spent on expanding the fossil fuel industry over the next 20 years. Is that a sensible use of people's money when we're trying to deal with climate change? You see, I think industry has fundamentally misread this. Investors who are inside the banking system and the capital markets in London, New York, here and elsewhere are really misreading this. And we've calculated, and you can download this report, I've got a couple with me, that $2 trillion just in the next sort of couple of decades is not going to be needed. And we've gone through it. We're clearly not going to need any new coal mines. Half a trillion dollars of gas projects are not going to be needed. And $1.4 trillion of oil projects are just not going to be needed in this 2 degrees scenario. And those that like sort of to map it, we've also produced maps around the world to explain the location of a lot of these projects and where they are. And you can see where we are with the projects in green just up at the top where we are today. So I want to sort of finish with a slide, and I'm happy to sort of, I don't know if people have questions on it, but when we coined the phrase the carbon bubble, we didn't say it was a financial bubble, but there are financial implications. If we do misspend this $20 trillion of expanding the fossil fuel industry in the next coming decades, if we do misallocate people's pension money to take on new projects, we're probably not going to land at 2 degrees. We'll probably have this choice. We could have invested it into clean energy. We could have built new infrastructure for the energy system. We could have even done something completely different. We could have gone into, I don't know, into electrification of other parts of the economy. There's been things that we could have done with that money which we wouldn't do if we commit that capital into new projects. So to deal with what we call a carbon tracker, the carbon bubble, we have to start by cancelling the next phase of these major projects that are being planned. Do we really need them? How serious are we with 2 degrees if we plan to expand this sector? And that fossil fuel companies and investors and governments will have to plan what we call an orderly transition, a contraction of the industry. And then lastly, I think, you know, if we have somebody in power who takes us in the wrong direction, we have elections. And we remove people from power and we replace them with people with a different plan. Actually, the business world has the same thing. They have board directors and there are votes that happen and directors get re-elected. If we have boards of companies, major companies, planning to misuse the financial system and misuse the will of nations who are trying to get a climate deal by planning for huge expansion, then we have, you know, we have as a right, if we're members of pension schemes, we can encourage them to use our votes to remove those board directors and put in people that are going to plan for a sustainable future. And that's really the challenge that we don't want to take them to, because we want boards and policymakers to work together, but maybe we'll have to go in that direction if we're to have any chance of really landing us at this very, very important 2 degrees target. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mark.